a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
It's time to get the inside scoop on the Utah Jazz.
From the play-by-play voice of the Jazz, David Locke.
Sweet revenge!
Presented by Murdoch Auto Group.
Ow!
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. David Locke joining us. Of course, his weekly conversation brought to you by the good folks over at the Murdoch Auto Group. David, good morning.
Hello,
how are you? Or actually,
David.
Good afternoon. Sorry.
You really don't know how I am. I'm about perfect right now. I'm in my van.
Somebody's
the
van
door is open.
Yep.
I finished skiing for the day. Well, I don't know. I thought I was finished skiing for the day, but it was really good and it's really gorgeous. So I'm debating going back out. I came back to the van to do a little work, to hold this conversation. I have a view of the mountains. The door is open. I had country music going hand, so you appreciate that.
Nice.
And I'm just chilling. That's really good.
I love it. So how was this most recent snow you got?
It's all been good. It's just incredible. I was sober this weekend. Snowbird is... For those who are not skiers, the best way I can describe snowboard like flexes on you when you arrive. Like there, it's the most intimidating like opening if you're on the Peruvian fan side. Like it just flexes on you like immediately. It's like talking trash. And the thing about snowboard is it's this expansive, incredible mountain that frankly usually only 75% is accessible. Either the rock lines or the cliffs or whatever else. It's just too much. Like, I'm not straight lining for 50 yards so I can get the next three turns. I just don't got that in me. So right now, it's 100% accessible. I mean, there's just everything's available. And actually, most stuff's fairly easy to get into right now. There's just so much snow. It's just amazing. The only thing I noticed today with the canyon is there's a lot of people in town. I think that we've bragged a little bit too much about our snow depth this year, and I think all of Colorado and all of everywhere else has arrived because there are a lot of people in the mountains there.
How does this compare to other years?
Best ever.
Best ever?
Nice.
Maybe. I haven't got it. Like, I have seriously, I'm no different than my teenage daughter right now. I have, like, serious Instagram envy every day. Like, I have not hit the same way some other people have. Like, I missed yesterday, which was supposedly pretty great. But it's got to be one of the greatest years of all time. I think I said this to you last time. Like, it's, like, you could make really, really bad life decisions based on this year, thinking it could happen again.
So, what you're saying is 10, 9, 10, 11, 12. Having 12 out of the last 14 games going in a stretch of January 10th to February 9th is pretty sweet.
Like, stupid. Like, right. Like, I've actually held this conversation with a bunch of people. Like, the opening of our season was as brutal as anything I've ever experienced in all my years in the NBA. And I mean, I really, like, I actually literally for, like, a week felt sick. Like, it just was so fatigued. And I didn't have to play. I don't know how they did it. And they played well, too, which I really am still flabbergasted by how, like, they didn't put up a single dud in that stretch. And I just thought it was brutal. Now, that might be being 52, and, like, one thing that just kills me is when we do 3:30 in the morning. Like, we were just arriving at 3:30 in the morning everywhere all the time. This has been, without question, the easiest month I've ever had in the history of my career. Like, this is crazy. Because even one of our road games was a 2 o'clock game, and I came home and had dinner at home that night. Like, our game in Minnesota, we're home by 8:30.
Yep.
So, like, I don't know the trade-off. I guess if I was given this as a choice, because I have a very serious ski problem, some people have drugs and alcohol problems, I just have a ski problem. I guess I would take this schedule again because of what you just mentioned, Hans. Like, being home for all but 2 days here has been ridiculous.
If you could have a schedule like this for all 82 games, you'd be doing this job till you were 90 years old, man.
Well, I'm not the one who chooses this. But if they allow me, I will certainly be the one who they have to tap on the shoulder and be like, hey, dude, you suck. It's time to go. Because there's no chance. I love doing this so much. There's no, I can't see that. The only reason I would ever quit the job was so I could see more, and I definitely can do that.
David, when you were calling that game last night, Jazz Dallas, could you sense that this team has a level of frustration or maybe hesitation or anticipation of what's coming up on the trade deadline? Was there something looming with this team?
You know, last night's funky. I mean, I agree with Will. Will's comment that they were disappointed at the lack of focus and the first time he felt that way all year. It's easy to say, well, they're flat. Remember, they were up 12, right? Like, you know, they came out pretty well. And then, I think, like, Will's comment about focus is probably the perfect way to phrase it. They just never made the extra pass. They, like, I've got a contested three, I'll just take it, because that's kind of what we do. You know, instead of like, well, okay, I've got a contested three, so let me drive the hoop and make the next pass, and he makes the next pass, and then we get a better look. Like, there was just none of that last night. We shot really badly from three, but I'm 90, you know me, I'm like a number, I'll hold on the numbers. And usually talk about like make or miss league. This was not a make or miss game. This was just, we took terrible shots. And Dallas got into us, and we didn't fight it. Trade deadline distractions, home too long. I don't know. But I would say that I felt like we have not been the same team the last two games. Like, the team, I didn't think we were particularly good against Atlanta either, frankly. Atlanta's really good, so I attribute a lot of that to Atlanta, but I didn't feel like we were quite right against Atlanta either. So either trade deadline news, honestly, just being home for so long has broken your rhythm a little bit. Like, it's just too easy. And, like, part of the rhythm of this league is it's really hard, and you're, like, fighting through it to be ready all the time. They have not seemed right for the last 48 hours or 72 hours.
David Locke joining us, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. All right, so give us your bird's eye view on how you think Kyrie Irving and Dallas. I mean, let's forget about all the weird stuff with Kyrie. Kyrie Irving, the player, with Luka Doncic as a player on this Mavericks team. What do you see?
So let me just first say, because I'm uncomfortable doing that, and I know you are. I'm not trying to throw you under the bus. Like, I'm uncomfortable holding conversations about Kyrie Irving and not acknowledging the fact that he had openly anti-Semitic support. It supported Alex Jones, who's a Sam Hooks hire, and another owner in the league traded for him. Okay? Like, I just can't hold a Kyrie Irving conversation without starting. The guy supported a Sandy Hooks hire and had openly blatant anti-Semitic comments that did damage. Like, I just can't start a conversation anywhere. Now, I think the basketball thing's really interesting in a few ways. One, I think it's going to be much harder with Luka than Kyrie. Kyrie's played with the greatest players in the world multiple times in different places, whether it was Durant or Braun or others. So now I play with Luka. When I've watched Dallas, it's clear to me that Luka, every time Luka brings the ball off the floor, he's double teamed and they swing it around. So it's clear that, like, you needed to play Luka off the ball. But I also watched Luka not want to be off the ball at all. I watched Jason Kidd build a really nice play where Luka came off a pin down the nail which is at the free throw line, got the ball, and they also seem to have a spot in the league to double team and let him make a play out of that. And they scored, and then I didn't see them run it for five straight plays late in the game, and I will promise you Jason Kidd wanted to run it again. I will promise you that. There's no chance you ran that play. It was that good, and you decided not to run it five straight times. That was Luka brought the ball up, and then you can't run the play if Luka brings the ball. So I think it's going to be a huge adjustment for Luka. I think they'll, you know, when Luka's off the floor, they're the worst offense in the NBA. So for 14 minutes a night, or maybe a little bit more, 16 minutes a night, this is going to be a big jump for them, which matters. That's 25% of the game, so let's not underestimate. That's going to be a big step forward. Dinwiddie wasn't terrible, but Kyrie's a different level. The next one is they're the number one half-court team in the league. So I actually don't think they're going to get that much better when they have Luka and Kyrie on the floor together. They've already been unbelievable. Like, you don't double-team Luka, he scores 50. If you do double-team Luka, you're giving up wide-open threes to 40% three-point shooters. And the last one, Dorian Finney-Smith was the best isolation defender in the NBA last year. And Donovan can attest to that in the playoffs. And I just think that's a big loss because Luka's so bad defensively, and Kyrie's not very good defensively. So I think Jason Kidd almost admitted last night they're going to have to win games 130 to 126, which, you know, might work fine. They have two of the top 10 offensive players. That usually is a really good equation. They'll be good. And I think it's, here's the thing I think is important. I think it's super important to the Jazz. Like, we talk about, like, we should view everything through the lenses of the Jazz. Anything involving Luka Doncic should be really important because he's 23 years old. We're trying to build a championship team. That's who we're going to have to go through. If Danny and Justin and Ryan Smith are successful in building a championship caliber team, you're going to have to go through Luka. He's 23. If he stays in Dallas, he will always be the one you're trying to get through.
Does it make them a contender?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
They got to run a little bit more than they do. Luka doesn't want to run. And they're the slowest team in the league. Last night they certainly, but those guys look excited not have to give the ball to Luka, you know? Like, you ran, and Luka's the greatest offensive player in the game, just understand me. But boy, did those guys look excited last night. Like, oh, we get a rebound and we get to go? We don't have to turn to find 77? Like, they were jacked last night. And they, you know, we have some problems with that lineup that we're seeing in transition, and right now it's a problem. We're allowing the most transition of any team in the league when we have Kessler, Olynyk, and Markkanen on the floor. Ron Boone pointed that out from the very beginning. Give him some credit. Somehow, guys, I don't know how this works, but, like, you've been in the league for 55 years, and you, like, get asked a question, and you're like, oh, we're really slow, we're having a hard time covering transition, and then that's the worst three-man transition lineup in the NBA. Like, oh, wow, that's funny, Rob. I'm like, you're pretty good at this. I don't think they're a contender. However, let me pull that back for a second. Who is the contender in the West?
That was my thought.
That's exactly the follow-up, yeah.
I've got a couple of thoughts on it. I really don't think Denver's a complete team, but I do wonder if the Clippers can pull it together at any point, if they can get totally healthy, if they can put something together. I also wonder what New Orleans is all about.
So, can we talk Clippers for a second? Because I'm just going to share, like, I'm totally, the two sides of me are completely torn on the Clippers right now. So, I've been a Clipper believer forever. Let me just say, I think Lauren Frank is amazing. What he does is the gentleman that putting the two together. It's nice to have Ballmer's budget also, but he's also just done a great job. Two, I'm doing an exercise this year where I'm trying to watch the final 9 minutes of every close game in the NBA. Mm-hmm. They couldn't look worse. They couldn't look worse. It's isolation on every play. Against Milwaukee, Kawhi and Paul George both airball. Against New York, Paul George puts up such a brick that it actually comes out and kicks out to Batum, who hits a three at the horn to save them, and then they win it overtime. They could not be worse. Guys get the ball, and if they're not in Kawhi Leonard, they, like, look to go get the ball to Kawhi so they can go stay away. I mean, it is so bad. There's no action. There's no ball movement. It's all one-on-one. Their defense is really good because they're long. And then, if you look at their numbers over the last 10 games, they're, I think, 7-3. They have the number one offense in the league. They have, like, the number four defense. And the numbers would tell you they have completely clicked in and ready to go. So I have no idea. If I was in their front office and I'd watched their last three close games, I would make a move because they don't have a ball move around the roster and the problem.
Interesting.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
David Locke joining us for his weekly conversation, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, brought to you by the Murdoch Auto Group. You comfortable with Golden State flipping the switch?
No, not anymore. Not with Steph's injury. I think that just... you asked me a week ago, and I would say it was my favorite to win the West. Now I'm not. I don't think he'll be back for more than like the week before the end of the season. And I think the burden on Klay Thompson and Draymond Green while he's out will wear them down. And then I think their route's going to be too hard. I assume they're going to come through the play-in at this point. And I, you know, we haven't seen a play-in team win a playoff series, if I'm correct yet. And I think that's actually a bigger deal. In 2 years, we don't have a very big sample size, but I think that's a bigger deal than we think. I think it's that route. That route of playing play-in, maybe even after like two play-ins, to get then into a series where you're on the road again, and then I just don't think you ever I think you're tired just the whole time. I don't think you ever regain kind of your bearings, and so I think that's too difficult.
Did they ever specify what ligaments it was in the leg for Steph?
Yeah, they were actually super specific, and it made no sense to me. But I read whatever his name was, Jeff Stone or whatever his name was.
Yeah.
There's a guy who does really great stuff on that. Injury stuff. And they were super specific with kind of strength, actually.
Okay.
Does LeBron get the record tonight?
So wait, who do you guys think? Like, who are your contenders in the West?
Well, I just felt like if the Clippers make it to the postseason, and if Kawhi and George, if they shift it, and you would think that they would have some of the firepower to do it.
They are playing Terrence Mann as their point guard. Do they need a point guard?
Yeah, that's tough.
Okay, all right. So let's just do this then. Clippers Nuggets 7-game series.
So I've got the Clippers.
Same. Clippers Grizzlies 7-game series.
7-game series. Clippers Nuggets. I think Jamal Murray's gonna be great after the All Star break. I think the night that we had 40 is really important. I did a bunch of research on ACL recovery, and everyone talks about like how many months until you recover. You know what I found in all my research? So just play.
You cut out.
Like, if you came back for the All Star game, and you got the All Star break, you came back from the All Star game believing your knee was good, and you came back and played well. If you came back after the All Star break, it was the end of the season. Stop it to play. Nothing that I found in my research showed me a certain time period of days from the injury that made you, or days from returning, that made you come back. It was stop it to play. It makes total sense to me psychologically. That you suddenly believed, oh, I got through this. I'm okay. And then you came back being your normal player. So I think Jamal Murray will be incredible in the final 25, 30 games of the season. I'll take Denver in that series.
All right. Let's go Clippers and Memphis.
This one I might go Clippers. Memphis may have overplayed their hand here. Just on this whole act they're putting on.
Yeah.
Dylan Brooks is horrible offensively, and they have to play him a lot to guard Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And he's just death to your team offensively. And the only thing is that Memphis runs at an incredible level, and the Clippers do not want to run. And so they might have a hard time in transition defense on that series.
Sacramento is my guilty pleasure. I love watching them play just because they're fun and they don't play defense. But I would still take the Clippers in a 7-game series there.
Yeah, I like Sacramento too. I think they're super interesting. The late game watch with Sacramento this year is fascinating because they were a terrible start. And Fox on every play, he was a mess. He's not a great five and score player. Then they opened it up and started running Sabonis on handoffs to Herder and Monk. And then they came back to Fox, and you see late he's having this totally insane clutch season that's almost impossible to replicate. And it's because they have this other stuff going on. Love Sabonis. They watched him against Minnesota the other night. Sabonis looked horrendous again because he just can't play Rudy. So what's interesting to me about Sabonis in the playoffs is if he runs into length, he's going to have a real problem. Like, I think Sacramento would lose to Minnesota in a series if they play early. But if the series goes long and everyone starts to – they keep going and everyone starts spreading the game out, I actually think Sabonis can really be a beast on switches and dominate. Like, if he's playing the Clippers and Terrence Mann is switching onto him, I think he could really dominate a playoff series. Now, defensively, he would – they would then be being called out on Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and have to guard, and that would be really, really hard. So, you know, that probably goes both ways. But I think Sabonis could be a really interesting playoff player against a team switching 1-5 because I think he'll murder him.
How much respect do you have for Ty Lue as a head coach?
A lot. More, you know, honestly, he won me over in the playoff series against us because I remember we were up 2-1 or something. I went to, out with Doris Burke and Mark Jones that night, and I was like, he's done everything. Like, I was like, this guy must know he has control of the team because he's played every card already, and usually if you play that many cards and none of them work, you lose your team in the process. And I was like, he must know he has a team because he's played every card, every, you know, he's played the Queen of Spades, he's played the Jack of Diamonds, he's played everything. And then he somehow actually had more cards to play and turned that whole series around. So he won the over in that series. I really have a belief on most of these coaches that they have what they want to do, and then they have what they can do. So I'm sure Ty Lue would love to move the ball and swing it and do a bunch of stuff. Like, that's just not happening with that roster.
Ty Lue is so, one of the things that played into my thought on the Clippers, but yeah, I
he's a positive, not a negative.
Yeah.
And he's a Cornhusker, so now I'm all in on any Cornhusker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, David, always a pleasure. Enjoy the snow, and we'll catch up again here soon.
Dude, how many lunches do I owe you?
A lot.
I mean, that's two in a row. And, like, I will forever love you, and I'm indebted, and we'll just bring food next time.
Let's plan on that.
How about we come to you? Okay. Stay where you are. We'll come to you.
I can cook. I got a microwave. I got a stove. I got a fridge. I have an espresso maker.
He's got some hot pockets in the freezer. Let's go.
Should we do Hands and Scotty live in the van?
I love it. I think it's perfect.
I've been in that van. It's a nice van. Me and you and Locke are going to eat up a lot of space.
I was not skiing. I was not there. You guys finished with the van. I had left.
Okay. All right. I like it. All right.
I'd leave you with the various things you need. Hands would have a hard time. Like, Hands, I need to know, like, when you're in the van, cinnamon gummy bears or red vines?
Cinnamon gummy bears.
Yeah, I agree. I need help. I have a very, very serious problem. I need help. I swear someone's going to do this. It's making me so happy. So, at the bottom of, like, when you come down from Snow Basin, right there, there's a gas station there, and they have the best cinnamon gummy bears. I don't know where they get them. They literally come in a Ziploc bag. They're completely probably unsanitary. They're so great. Last time I see Snow Basin, I bought 4 bags. I'm out. Somebody's coming back from Snow Basin or going to Snow Basin this weekend. I need you to grab me some of those cinnamon gummy bears from that gas station right there at the bottom of Trapper's Loop because I need those, and I don't know when I'm going to Snow Basin next time.
Bless your heart to anybody that does that for David.
So, you know, I used to, when I was doing small town radio up in Logan, we'd have this, like, swap and shop show for 10 minutes. And I would get on the air and somebody would be like, hey, I've got 2 tons of two square yards of dirt. And somebody would call in and be like, well, I've got 2 head of cattle. Can I swap the dirt for the cattle?
Oh, awesome.
That's 100% true. It was a swap and shop is what we called it. And so, David, you are looking for cinnamon bears from this gas station. What are you willing to offer for said cinnamon bears?
Well, that's a good question.
Do you have an extra pair of gloves, like a nice neoprene glove? Or
I don't know. I'm willing to offer. I'm trying to figure out what's the equivalent value of, like, a few bags of cinnamon gummy bears?
Well, I mean, it's not monetary value because you value those more than the money.
How about this?
Well, need to know what that person wants.
Well, I think you know what those people want.
Do you have, like, some specialty coffee packets Like some coffee that's ground in Cuba that nobody else
get? I would be willing to share my favorite espresso Stella from Portland that I ship in.
But
a large part of our listening audience does not want my espresso beans.
Hey, it could be a one-night stay in the lock van down by the river.
There you go.
We're not doing that.
Let's get that sucker on Airbnb. Let's go.
That's my suggestion.
We're not doing that either.
They get to sit in and call with Ron Boone one game.
that's worth a lot more than a few bags of sugar. If we're doing that, we're auctioning that off at some charity that actually matters.
How about a shout out on the Locked On Jazz podcast?
That is definitely what happened, probably regardless of whether or not it was agreed to beforehand.
Somebody get my guy some cinnamon bears, man.
Stat, let's go.
I gotta find out where they get their cinnamon bears because they're so good. And they drive out the Trapper's Loop just to get cinnamon bears seems a bit much.
I've got a cinnamon bear habit too, Dave. Pretty bad.
We cannot share this story on the air, the specifics of the story, but let's just say my guy here had his faith in humanity restored once in a big, big way by our listeners. So our listeners are very giving.
Big way.
In a big way. So our listeners will get you taken care of, yeah. David. I don't doubt that
because you have such a massive audience. I've seen your ratings. So
that is true. That is true.
Good numbers.
All right. David, you're the best, man. Thanks.
I owe you, too. Okay. See
ya. Bye, David.
All right, see ya. That's David Locke, play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.